Hi, and welcome to DC Public Safety. I'm your host, Len Sipes. At our microphones today, back at our microphones, is John Hattery. He is with the National Association of Home Builders and the Home Builders Institute. And also we have Will Parker from the CSOSA staff. Will is a senior program analyst for the person in charge of finding employment for offenders within the DC area. And to John and Will, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Hi, Len.
Glad to be here.
All right. First of all, I want to thank our audience, and that's something I don't do enough. We have 80,000 people coming to this site on a monthly basis, 80,000, and we are really grateful for all of the comments, and we want you to know that we respond to every individual comment that you send us, either in the comments box or in the email address directly to me. Either way, every comment is responded to, and we work your comments into our shows. So we want to thank you. If you have suggestions, go ahead and as you're listening to the show, look for the email address or look for the comments box and give us your feedback. And we welcome your feedback, and we do incorporate your feedback into every show. All right. With that introduction, we're going to go back to John Hattery. And so one of the things that when we had John on last time, we talked about a variety of things that they have found, and the National Association of Home Builders has these training institutes all throughout the country dealing with offenders and hard-to-employ people. And they came up with six individual, principles that led to their success. And one was individualized services for offenders. Number two was have a job development coordinator for offenders, so you don't have staff doing job development. You have a person, a completely different person doing job development. Number three is that when they did not do well on the job, the first job, you replace them. You put them on another job site, and that's a routine part of the experience. Number four is to be sure that they have hands-on experience, so that they actually, you know, in talking about bricklaying, that they knew how to lay brick, which seems commonsensical, but that was a key principle. Programs with a future, we're talking about, in many cases, jobs in the building trades where you can go ahead and do magnificent careers where you can float from being an electrician to a plumber to you can bring on a variety of experiences and a variety of training. And number six was having a caring staff, and that was the success of the Home Builders Association and specifically the Home Builders Institute that John Hattery directly works for. John.
Hi, Len. I wish I could say it all that quickly. My boss wishes I could say it all that quickly.
Well, the point is that the Home Builders Institute and the Home Builders Association, you're at locations, multiple locations throughout
right.
the country, and in many job corps centers throughout the country.
That's
and,
absolutely right.
And people who've listened to the first show knew that I've worked a job corps at one time dealing with the jail or job corps kids. And I was amazed as to how comprehensive Job Corps was and the wide variety of services. Anything else to add about the Home Builders Association that you want to talk about before we get into today's topic?
As you mentioned, two sides to the training house. We have our Job Corps Job Corps program, which is larger than our individual customized program at the Workforce Training and Employment Department. But both deal with hard-to-serve populations, and both try to give what we try to call the five pieces of the employment puzzle, try to nod toward making sure that you have training, making sure you have linkages to job, making sure that you have a credential, be it a trades credential or a high school diploma or a GED. Mm-hmm. And also, do you have transportation or have you planned for transportation? Because, you know, many times our clients don't have cars of their own, don't have driver's licenses on their own. However, you have to take into account those kinds of logistical, operational things when you're trying to link somebody to employment. So, you know, essentially the lessons we learned from our long history with Job Corps, my boss, Dennis Torbett, created a model that we've been able to replicate across the country where we try to attend to these needs, that these five pieces of the employment puzzle that I call it.
Okay. Will Parker, you are the person in charge of finding jobs for offenders here at the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
For those of you who have listened to the program this over a year and a half, and wow, I'm close to close to 100 programs now, radio and television programs, have heard what we do. We're a federal agency, parole and probation agency. We provide services exclusively to Washington, D.C. Will Parker, I've talked to him 100 times about this whole process of finding jobs for ex-offenders. So, Will, welcome to D.C. Public Safety.
Pleasure to be here.
And tell me what it is that you do as the person in charge of finding employment for former offenders.
Okay. Back in January of 2002, the agency had the wherewithal to convince congressional membership of the merits of placing a unit whose principal charge would be to provide education, employment, and vocational opportunities for those individuals under our supervision. Since then, on average, we've serviced on an annual basis roughly about 4,000 individuals each year. And we have collaboratives with the Workforce Investment Council here within D.C. and also the D.C. Chamber. We're also working with the Department of Employment Services as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making inroads. We're not where we need to be, but by the grace, we will get there.
Nobody is where they need to be. That's
absolutely
one of the things that I found out about this whole thing. But D.C. government provides the bulk of the training, correct?
D.C. government does. One of the things that the mayor is currently working on is an initiative with the private employers as well. We want to plug them and peg them to see if we can have upwards of about 200 jobs this year in which we can plug our offender population into.
Right. But, I mean, the point is that if you I was talking to, interviewed a person about 4 weeks ago, mm-hmm. who went through a job development course here mm-hmm. in the District of Columbia, mm-hmm. and now he's out there working on a regular basis. So we do the assessments, and
yes.
we do educational
yes.
Programs.
Mm-hmm.
We do the assessments, and we suggest different occupations mm-hmm. where that person mm-hmm. could plug himself or herself into, but they're essentially D.C. government programs that provide the job training, right?
Yes.
Okay.
By and large.
All right. Now, I've gone through that tremendous, tremendously long introduction to talk about what it is that I want to talk about today. This is a topic of some controversy. It is a topic of great importance to the attitude of ex-offenders on the job. So what do I mean by the attitudes of offenders on the job? Well, I've talked to people who have construction companies here in town, commercial construction, and John represents the National Association of Home Builders, and so they do individual homes, they do apartment complexes, condos, that sort of thing. So I've talked to various people on various sides of the construction industry, and the thing that I hear more than anything else is that it's not so much, don't necessarily bring me a person who knows how to lay brick. I can teach that person how to lay brick. I don't necessarily need that person to know how to pour concrete. Send me a person who will show up every single day, who will not use drugs, who will not use alcohol, who has an ability to learn, who has the right attitude, and that person can go from zero to $60,000 a year in 1 year. Now, and I'm saying to myself, wow, that's an amazing concept. John Hattery, we're going to talk with you about this first. That's an amazing concept, don't you think? That it's contrary to popular opinion, it may not be the issue of having massive job training programs. Is the construction industry at the place now where they're simply saying, come one, come all, for the person with the right attitude and the right set of willingness skills,
right.
That person can make a good living, John.
Well, you're talking about the balance between soft skills and hard skills. You're talking about the balance between workplace behaviors and appropriate workplace behaviors, understanding what they are, being able to demonstrate them on a consistent basis for a long time, and also being able to combine that with technical skill. We try our best, maybe not always as well as we'd like, but we try our best to attend to those needs, you know, so people understand the nuts and bolts of getting to work on time and having a plan B and understanding that bosses have bad days too. And occasionally you have to listen to a boss who's having a bad day, vent, and life isn't fair and all those kinds of things, along with, you know, how do you handle your paychecks and all those other soft skills that goes into being a successful employee. You know, I run training programs, and so I'm going to lean toward talking a little bit about the value of training as it relates to the soft skills, only in that many of our clients, and I think you'll agree with me and will agree with me, that many of our clients have so many needs, have so many esteem needs and so many opportunities in their prior lives to fail that they're not used to being successful. And so, you know, even if you talk about the soft skills in a general term and you give them the opportunity to practice those soft skills, if you don't combine that with hard skills training, you walk into a situation where they may not feel the same confidence they would feel otherwise. If, for instance, to use your analogy as a bricklayer, if I send somebody who's really demonstrated great soft skills but really doesn't know much or has much confidence with brick and trowel or a mixer in hand, mm-hmm. okay, and I send them to a job site where they're expected to work and be productive as a bricklayer or a mason's tender or a mason's helper, but they don't have that the hard training behind them to bolster their confidence, you know, that's where you, I think you could also run into a problem. I think the training and the certification and the six months or 12 weeks, whatever the length of the training program is, that gives the person the hard skills, bolsters their confidence, okay. and adds to the soft skills.
But here's my question, and it's going to go over to Will. Mm-hmm. Is the industry at the point where, and I'm talking specifically the construction industry, is it the industry to the point where it's saying to all comers, not just to offenders, but all comers, that, look, we can train you. You know, you don't have to have prior training. We can train you. Just for the love of good God, show up every single day at 5 a.m. Show up ready to work every single day. I don't want to hear about, as I've heard others put it, baby mama drama. Mm-hmm. I don't want to hear about anything else besides that you're going to give me 8 good hours today of work, mm-hmm. do that, mm-hmm. put a smile on your face, and I can show you how to make really good money in a fairly short amount of time. Is that where the industry is, Will?
I think so. What we've come to recognize, particularly with the employers here within D.C., is that they're telling us that they need someone with great conflict resolution skills, a good work ethic, and a desire to succeed. Having that as a building block and that mindset will provide the platform on which they can also provide the technical skills.
Okay.
So that's pretty much what we've been hearing from the employer community. Give us an individual who has strong work ethic and is willing to work, a desire to succeed, we can give them the technical skills to succeed on the job.
Okay. When I was with the state of Maryland for 14 years, public safety and correctional services, both law enforcement and corrections, we had the Maryland prison system mm-hmm. under our department. And I talked to the guy in charge of what they call state use industries, which is basically factories mm-hmm. in prisons. Mm-hmm. And he said the most important skill that he teaches, that his people teach to these thousands of offenders on a yearly basis, was just what we're talking about. Showing up. This is the prison now. Mm-hmm. Showing up every day, being on time, working cooperatively, mm-hmm. not taking off sick when it's not necessary, mm-hmm. Working as a team, no feedback, no fuss, no muss. If you got to skip lunch to make a production quota, absolutely. That's exactly what you do. And he would routinely fire people mm-hmm. off of prison jobs because there was a waiting list for these jobs. Mm-hmm. And then 2 months later, the person would come back and he'd mouth off at somebody, got fired again. And then 2 months later, he would come back and begin to understand that this is, you know, this is not going to work. Mouthing off to your supervisor mm-hmm. is not going to work. And so he said that those were the most important skills. It didn't. The bricklaying was important, and the plumbing was important, and mm-hmm. working on a printing press was important, but that was the most important thing. So are we at the point where we need to focus on attitude as much as we're focusing on bricklaying skills?
Well, I think really and truly the two go hand in hand. One of the things that we are starting to recognize and we're in the process of trying to build a strong curriculum for is the core skills, which is a combination of the life skills, the work ethic, and the job readiness. So we teach individuals how to interview, we prepare their resume, but we also talk about a sense of right and wrong, a sense of dedication, and a good work ethic. Because we realize that in order for a person to succeed, they need to have a reasonable sense of self-esteem and a desire to be successful. So we believe that those two complementary components go into the equation where when you provide those technical skills, you have a well-rounded individual and someone who can, in fact, not only be on the job, but can also experience career enhancements at the same time.
I'm going to give contact points for both of you for John Hattery. You can go to the website, www.hbihomebuildersinstitute.org, www.hbi.org. I'll repeat that at the end of the program for Will. Mm-hmm. You can go to www.csosa.gov, and that is the website for the Federal Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency here in downtown D.C., or 202-220-5300, 202-220-5300 for the main number. John, going back to you. Now, okay, so I want to also acknowledge the fact that the District of Columbia, the metropolitan area, not the city, but the standard metropolitan statistical area, has the lowest rate of unemployment in the country. From what we're discussing about, it's more important for the attitude than it is for hard skills, or they're equally important. I'm not quite sure what the message is. Is that going to apply in San Diego? Is it going to apply to Minneapolis? Is it going to apply to Cleveland? Or is it just unique to the fact that...
I think having a good employee with good relational skills to their coworkers is a universal concept. The difference comes, and Will will probably be able to bear this out, is in down economies like we're having in most of the rest of the country, it takes HBI a little bit longer.
The Home Builders Institute,
yes. Builders Institute takes our placement staff a little longer than it did a couple of years ago to hook someone up with a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Wages in certain parts of the country are backing up due to the economy.
Right.
However, the concept of having good soft skills, having a good employee, combined again, as Will mentioned, with good technical skills, are universal concepts and concepts that aren't going to change from region to region.
Okay. Well, why would this even be an issue? And I know why. So many of our offenders come from histories of abuse. So many of, and I'm not making excuses for those people who are about to climb on the email and tell me that I'm making excuses. I'm not making excuses for criminal behavior at all. But to say that the bulk of offenders come from histories of abuse and neglect is like saying today is the 29th of May. I hope I'm reading that correctly. And it's just factual. And I understand that's, in my opinion, is where most of the attitude issues are coming from, the fact that if you raise yourself at age 8 and you get involved in substance abuse at age 10, and you're smoking a lot of marijuana at age 13, inevitably that is going to lead you to a lot of issues.
Well, I would say this, Len. I would say that I agree with everything you said right there, and you could even take the word offender out of that sentence and put potential worker.
Sure.
And there's a lot of business owners who are around talking, going to the Department of Labor and other places, talking about the readiness of folks.
Well, that's true. That's regular. There's a lot of civilians for that's a terrible way of putting it. But there's a lot of non-offenders. The issues are just the same. But I mean, what does that say? What does that say? I mean, when we take a look at offenders, and it's clearly within society's best interest to help people who are coming out of the prison system, who are caught up in the criminal justice system, it is just you know, study after study after study will say that this is true, then what is there a magic formula here? Is there, and I know it's not a one-stop concept. I know there are many other things to focus on, but should we be dealing more with attitudes and sending out the message that this is the message my father gave me, the message my father gave me when I went on my workforce and he arranged my first job at the age of 16 was shut up. Listen to the people, give them a good 8 hours, don't screw off, but more than anything else, yes sir, no sir, and just shut up and listen. Now, that to me seems the advice my father gave me at 16 when I was pushing paper products through the middle of the incredibly hot, humid summers in downtown Baltimore from place to place. That advice seems to apply today. Will, you want to try that?
Well, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that... one of the things that Mr. Ormond, my boss, shared with us in terms of analyzing the mindset and culture and mores of our offender population is that, contrary to what we initially thought in terms of rehabilitation, that oftentimes these individuals need to be rehabilitated. That is to say that they have not encountered a household in which mom and dad got up every morning and went to work and was dedicated to the proposition of making provisions for the family and extended family. So when you couple that mindset with individuals who, in the case of the CSOSA, 39%, only 39% of our population actually has a high school diploma, you're talking about some problems with the skill set, but also with the mindset. And I think that both of them have to be addressed. And fortunately, I'm very proud to say that CSOSA has understood the necessity of trying to address both of these issues within the curriculum that it has in place for the offender population.
Because a lot of that curriculum is very comprehensive. The Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency is lucky. And we're lucky because we're a federal agency.
Absolutely.
And it's lucky because we have money that other parole and probation agencies simply do not have. Mm-hmm. So we can send our folks to anger management.
Mm-hmm.
We can send our folks for a GED assessment.
Absolutely.
We can send our folks for a job assessment, figure out what that person is going to be good at. And another occupational area that we've been very successful in terms of placing offenders has been the commercial driver's license program.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a wide open area for people with criminal histories, as long as they're not driving secured loads or, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of stuff. They're making very good money.
Absolutely.
So I guess my point, I keep coming back to the same point, that there are an array of offenders who can come out of the prison system and not work at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about, you know, hey, let's just get your, we're talking about real jobs with not just a living wage, we're talking about way beyond a living wage. We're talking about real jobs with a real future. John.
If we can get folks to understand that the opportunity is in front of them, one of the things that my mind went to when you were talking about pushing paper around in downtown Baltimore was one of the ways we attack that at Home Builders Institute is we hire instructors from the field. We don't hire vocational educators.
Right.
We hire
the real deal.
We hire guys who have poured concrete for a living, who have mm-hmm. Who are carpenters for a living, electricians
mm-hmm.
for a living,
mm-hmm.
and then we give them some skills through some coursework and some other things to teach them how to teach. But essentially what we task them to do is run your shop, run your group like it is a job site.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that includes, frankly, you know, behavior stuff.
Sure.
If this young man are having a hard time and they're not getting along and it's affecting the production on the shop, because as I told you last time, we do a lot of community service.
Right.
We do a lot of work out in the community.
Right. A lot of the Habitat for Humanity building, actually going out and building homes. You're just not laying bricks. You're laying a brick in a house.
We are. And although we are not production, we are training. Occasionally we run into a deadline, and occasionally we're able to use that as another teaching point.
Right.
And so some of the soft skills that we've discussed and agree that are so important, one of the ways that we teach them is we have a guy who has done nothing but make his living, or a woman in many cases, who have done nothing but make their living as a tradesperson,
mm-hmm.
teaching young people who are trying to be tradesperson the importance of working together.
Right.
And the importance of teamwork and the importance of being able to get along even with somebody that you don't particularly like.
Right. But you know, that's just the difficulty, I think, and either one of you can take this, is that if you have a person who is struggling with getting along with other human beings, and one of the things that you mentioned before, John, I think is extremely important. You will take a person who you've trained through the National Association of Home Builders and the Home Builders Institute, somebody who you've trained, and they don't work out in the first job, you'll find another job placement for them. It's just not a one-shot deal, and I think that's also extraordinarily important.
Well, you touched on it earlier, and Will's touched on it earlier, your story about the gentleman who runs the prison job system, mm-hmm. and how there was improvement after he had to let somebody go and bring him back a couple of times.
Right.
We tell people all the time, you must show up on time, you must show up every day, you must put in a fair day's work for a fair day's wage.
Sure.
And if you choose not to do those things, you may find yourself without a job.
Right.
Young people especially, you know, they look at me or they look at their instructor and they, you know, that all becomes kind of noise to them.
Well, and I understand that just simply having young daughters. and who you try to instill the values of an occupational attitude, and to find out that one of my daughters did not communicate well with one of her employers and basically said some inappropriate things, and I'm going, what in the name of good heavens are you thinking? You know, so it's I understand it's young people generically, but I also understand that with a lot of people coming out of the prison system or even people who are on probation, they don't get a lot of shots. You know, my daughters can fail, and yet they've got a soft landing waiting for them up to a certain point. But if you're out there, you know, coming out of the prison system, you don't have a lot of soft landing points. If you go out and screw it up the first, the second times, that may be a lifelong decision that you've just made. My daughters, you know, there are remedies. But you've got to be able to, you've somehow, some way convince people that you don't have a lot of bites at the apple when you've come out of tough living situations and you, generally speaking, don't have a high school diploma, and generally speaking, you don't have a job history. It may be now or never. I don't want to be that melodramatic, but it may be that, Will.
I think you're absolutely right. Not to discount what John is saying, and I think that I have to applaud a system in which an individual can be fired and then rehired a month or two later. I think that that's great. But one of the things that we're trying to focus on is preparing an individual by way of his mindset, in which he has an opportunity, she has an opportunity, and we are trying to make sure that individual makes the most and of that situation. So as such, what we instruct them is that this very well could be your only opportunity for a long, long time, so please make the most of it. The other thing that is worthy of note is that oftentimes employers are not willing to take a second chance on a referral agency such as CSOSA. So to the extent that we send someone and that person doesn't work out, oftentimes we don't have the luxury of sending a second person, because
right.
the employer just says, look, we gave you an
right.
opportunity, and
right.
that person didn't show well. So we need to think about it before we make another overture towards your company in terms of actually hiring someone.
Sure. And we're in the final minutes of the program, and I want to give the contact points once again. But I do want to overemphasize the fact that there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of offenders who do come out of the prison system, who are in probation, who do make the transformation, who do understand that their circumstances in life, and so I don't want to make it all negative now. They do understand the circumstances, they do understand what side is up, and they do understand that their circumstances, and they do well. They go out and go to Miller and Long and go to another construction company, and they learn how to pour concrete, and they go on to good careers. Well, that's correct, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, go ahead and say that to the microphone.
Too far absolutely. Away from the microphone. I'm sorry.
Okay, and I just wanted to end the program on an upbeat, optimistic note. But I think this has been an extraordinarily interesting discussion, and I thank both of you for participating. Our guests today have been John Hattery, and he is with the National Association of Home Builders, the Home Builders Institute. I think that they have an extraordinarily powerful program. All all throughout the United States, and they should be congratulated for their involvement. It's www.hbi.org, www.homebuildersinstitute.org. And John, thank you for being on the program.
Thanks very much, Lynn. Thanks for having me.
Will Parker, Senior Program Analyst for the Federal Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency here in downtown D.C., 202-220-5300, 202-220-5300 for the generic number. Just ask for Will. The website here is www.csosa.gov. Will, thanks for being on the program.
Thanks. Really a privilege to be here and to share my comments as it relates to occupational and educational and employment opportunities for our offender population.
Okay, and I thank you, the listener. There are 80,000 of you every single month who come onto the website and to listen to these programs at DC Public Safety, and we are extremely appreciative of your involvement. This is Len Sipes. I'm your host, and please have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.